The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And good Wednesday morning, and welcome to a mid-week, a hump day edition of Analyze This here on your NPR station in the U.S. Virgin Islands, WTJX FM, with yours truly, Neville James. It's a beautiful day in paradise, and we got a great show laying up. I had a great show yesterday as well, so let's keep it rolling now. Let's get right to it. We got Vitima director Daryl Jashin in the house tomorrow. Officially begins the hurricane season, so you know how we do here on Analyze This. We're in preparation mode. Good morning, Director. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Neville. Thank you for the opportunity to come on the show this morning and talk about what's coming our way.
Well, what's going on in the Gulf right now?
The Gulf, they have a little bit of a challenge coming up there. There may be a potential of something coming. It's early in the season, but tomorrow is official start. We'll see what happens. You know, so the U.S., always is something. It's very, very warm down in the Gulf already with the temperatures, and we'll see the threats are going. The other thing is, as you know, in Guam. Guam got hit really hard last week.
Last week, typhoon.
The typhoon. You talk about time and distance. It's 4,000 miles away from Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Its population is 170,000 people there. So we were watching very closely last week also what was happening in Guam.
Climate change is real.
Oh, very much so. Mm-hmm. And I think we can see the El Nino effects and El Niño effects happening also that are going to impact the Atlantic as well as the Pacific.
The idea that here we are on day one, the precipice of day one, and we already have activity in the Gulf. I'm sorry, but that's a scary proposition, man.
I think,
on the surface.
Yeah, and then last week they had also off the South Carolina coast, activity. So again, no matter the time of year, it's turning to an all-hazards environment. Mm-hmm. You saw tornadoes coming through earlier this year in the southeast. So you have dramatic changes occurring. Mother Nature's, and be prepared is what we always talk about. Stay informed and be vigilant. That's what Vitima is all about. That's what we want to make sure that every individual has the opportunity to be prepared and be informed.
The hurricane hunters, they're going to train here again this year?
Well, hurricane hunters, I won't use the word train. They station out of here. They fly missions, and we watch the missions go through. The conversations.
The reason why I ask is they did some training either last year or the year before, I believe it was last year, down there in Fredericton. They had a group of them came over, and they went through their routines and all that stuff over there. So I'm just curious if we're doing that again, if you hear anything.
I have not heard about the training mission for that. I just know they're geared up to support us here on the island of St. Croix, and they go out and they give us close to 20%, better accuracy in the forecast. Anything mm-hmm. beyond that is going to be all models. But we definitely want to have them stay here as long as they can. And once they leave, we're a little bit worried because mm-hmm. that means things are probably going to be heading our way.
Okay. By the way, how's the agency doing? I know we got into hurricane talk, but how's my team making up?
I can tell you, 911, we've done a lot of outreach last couple of months. We've hired a lot of new staff into 911, and I really want to thank the Division of Personnel, my Vitima staff, Assistant Director Barbara Peterson, Deputy Director Bruce Kelly, our two supervisors, St. Croix and St. Thomas. Having a job fair for 911 has been fantastic. And, of course, my division of personnel, Deputy Director Philomene, that is success right there. And, to be able to have a person come in and sit down and do an interview, then take the test right then and there, process division of personnel paperwork, and be able to come on board very quickly, that's unheard of. So we definitely want to talk about the success 911 has and getting 911 what it used to be 5 years ago to what it is today. The technology has come up leaps and bounds also.
That's good. Infrastructurally, how are we in terms of our shelters and all that stuff?
We'll be putting a press release out tomorrow to combine between Government House, Department of Human Services, Vitima, Red Cross, announcing the approved shelters for 2023. We have three identified on the island of St. Thomas. You have two Adora Ken High School, one gymnasium, one cafeteria, and again, Lockhart Elementary School has been tried and true for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. Over on St. John, we do have the Adrian Senior Center. that we've had that for the last couple of years, a nice facility for there. And then on St. Croix, we have Complex, which is our large one. We can put 739 people in there for an evacuation shelter, and then we have DC Canegada. Mm-hmm. So we'll put that information out, and the intent is we would open up shelters under Governor Bryan's direction, and the goal would be 24 hours prior to the onset of tropical storm force winds. Plus, we do have what's called medical special needs shelters that are run by the Department of Health. On St. Thomas is at Schneider Regional Medical Center, and on St. Croix will be at CTEC. So that's all done through the Department of Health.
What about the generator that's long coming for the complex that's supposed to serve as our energy source?
Well, Vitima has pre-positioned. We started last year. We put two 100-kilowatt generators out there, one to support the CTEC side, one to support the complex side. So those are out there, ready to go. They're in position today. We tested those last week, part of our exercise. We had a huge hurricane exercise called Capstone last week. Mm-hmm. And then talking to Director Kyle Fleming, they have started a microgrid out there in complex that should be done. And he even crossed his fingers yesterday and nodded and said, you know, end of August, we should have that up and operational. So right in the height of hurricane season, it'll be good to have that capacity at complex to support that if we need it.
Okay, good. That's good. Now, federal support, FEMA, all that stuff. When a hurricane is looking like it's coming here, they normally provide support. We've already put that in place already. That line of communication?
Yes, very much so. And what has happened with FEMA over the last several years, and again, it goes back to 2017, FEMA now has a permanent presence here in the territory.
Okay.
So Mark Walters has been my partner for the last several years. We work very closely together, and he has a staff down here that's permanent. A lot of it is outreach. A lot of it helps us with planning in the districts, both in St. Thomas and St. Croix. And they have what's called an IMAT team that will deploy down here, and it could be a light package or it could be a heavy package. They will usually deploy down one plus what the prediction is. So if it's a Category 1, they will come down with forces that support a Category 2. Or if it's a Category 2 predicted, it will come out of the Category 3 package. So mm-hmm. you'll end up anywhere from 60 individuals to potentially 160 individuals coming down here. Not just FEMA, but also our federal partners. And of course, the Department of Defense is very much part of that. And we do have some partnership with the National Guard that will require the National Guard to surge, bring from other states in here. But it'll take about 2 weeks for them to come down here. So the Department of Defense will be our first go-to military support in addition to FEMA.
What kind of relationship we got with Puerto Rico?
Puerto Rico, we have a good relationship. However, we would caution very carefully because if they're going to be hit, we're hit also. So, mm-hmm. We worked in the same Caribbean district. We support each other with equipment, with personnel. But by design, we don't necessarily depend on each other. If something happens after the fact, then we can support each other. Then we can send individuals there through what's called the EMAC agreement, state-to-state agreement, Commonwealth to territory. It could be police. It could be public works. It could be National Guard. So that relationship is always there, but we have to be very cautious. We don't send all our equipment and personnel over to that islands.
We have a task force of local agencies like we did with COVID in terms of hurricanes.
We have a couple of task forces. The first one I'll talk about is debris removal task force. Mm-hmm. Debris removal, route clearance, combination between public works, water power authority, and Waste Management Authority are very much part of that, as well as National Guard for route clearance to make sure we keep the roads open as soon as we can. Debris removal, if you go back to 17, there's a lot of vegetation debris, a lot of concrete, a lot of, refrigerators, stoves that were thrown out on the street. We had to pick those all up, and some of that became concern. Obviously, keeping those guts clear for the next storm that may come through. Department of Public Works is very much on that. So that's one of our main task force. The other one we talk about is patient movement evacuation, mm-hmm. as well as lessons we learned from Irma Maria. So we have a very strong group that comes together, a combination of our two hospitals, the U.S. Health and Human Services Division, Department of Human Services here in the territory, Department of Health, Vitran, National Guard, even Port Authority to work on that movement. We just did two assessments last week at each airport to make sure we understood roles and responsibilities if we do have to do a patient movement, as well as tracking individuals. If they do leave a territory, we know where they are. We know caregivers are going with them. So all that is very, very much a task force that we work with. The other one is just how do we communicate? How do we communicate in a sense of to the media? We have Joint Information Center, which are all public information officers coming together. We get the information out to make sure you are informed as a radio station host, as well as the community on the radio. We have the messaging and prioritization of roles and responsibilities. And we go back to what's called a unity of effort to make sure we're all focused on the right priorities. The first priorities are all about saving life and protecting property.
We had a storm here in April that I don't want to say it came out of nowhere, but it presented some unique challenges where we not only had a significant amount of rain, but we had a precipitous drop in temperature where in the middle of the day we were in the 60s. Aberration based on what we've seen in the past. But do we learn from experiences like that?
I think our learning discussion goes back to National Weather Service. I mean, they're the ones that we give us heads up a lot of times what's happening. So working with them, they're 24 hours a day. They're in Puerto Rico. I know you have a great relationship with them also. Mm-hmm. But that's where our learning comes from, is the ability for us to get the information early and communicate to the community to understand the impact to the territory. I do worry about, you know, heavy rains coming through for a couple of weeks, and all of a sudden a Category 1 hurricane coming up, and we dismiss that. Mm-hmm. But we can't dismiss it because you have a saturated ground environment that you're going to have trees can uproot very much very easy. You have the guts are already, you know, overflowing, so we do have concerns. It doesn't take much to cause a environment that would not be a safe environment to be in.
Talk a little bit about how flash flooding. We tend to hear that in a forecast, but we don't really, some of us may not take it as seriously as we should.
Yeah, you know, with a hurricane, you have what's called bands. Bands of rain will come early before the hurricane comes through, and they'll be very intense. They may be only for, you know, 10 minutes, or they could be for an hour, but they're very intense rains, and those will cause a lot of rain to come out of the hills, and the rains will go in the guts, and then you have the flash floods. And the flash floods, usually for a short period of time, and because of, you know, we don't have much standing water, some places like Frederickstead, for historically, because we don't have the sewers fixed yet, we do have a lot of standing water down there, but it takes a while.
Well, that's a basin, though. Even if we had the sewers quick fit down there, they are set down in the lower in the lowlands, and the water settles down there.
But from a safety perspective, you know, we don't want you to drive cars when you have the flooding environment, because it doesn't take much water in order to float your cars, and then you have no control, and before you know it, you're being washed downstream. So we always talk about staying away and going around any flooding, waiting till it subsides before it goes forward. But yeah, flash flood, and that information will come, National Weather Service will put that out. But when we put that flash flood alert out, it means, you know, those areas, be very careful. You're going to have heavy pours, heavy rains, and risk if you can go out and you're driving around. The best thing to do is stay indoors. And if you are in an area that's prone to flooding, you need to seek to go to safe shelter for that period of time.
I had experience the latter part of April. I parked at a facility, and I didn't realize that I had parked in the parking lot itself, but in an area where there was a decline and there was significant amount of rain. And by the time I came out, water was at half the way by the door, right? So I actually had to walk in water and all that stuff. So the reason why I brought that up was because I wanted you to speak to those who are operating vehicles, also pay attention to where they park the car, not just where they drive, because standing water can build up, and before you know it, you can't access your vehicle.
Yeah, especially, you know, if you're a visitor here, like you say, you go somewhere where you haven't been before.
Yeah.
You got to start thinking ahead of time and saying, "Well, okay, me park the high ground, you avoid the that spot may be open, but it's open for a reason."
Correct.
Yeah, very much so. But that's all about situational awareness. We talk about knowing your environment. You know, having that information with you, if you have neighbors can tell you, hey, don't park down here, park up top, so you can protect yourself and your car.
Now, speaking of the importance of agencies working together and agencies benefiting from work that other agencies do, the Christiansted Port Terminal, they finally paved the road from the stoplight down into the Christiansted Port Terminal, heading towards that main intersection by Marshall and Sterling. That road is now a concrete road. And the reason why I bring that up is because Recovery Mountain.
Yep.
And you were just speaking about the washdown, all right? And now of course, you know, I'm not anxious to see it, but it would be, we are looking to see how that now, that infrastructure development will actually assist a big problem we've had for decades where a lot of stones and all that stuff build up was a part of that road.
Yeah, a lot of work has gone into that, and that's one of our primary recovery projects for that mitigation for any future that goes on with the rain. But you are going to see, and I've seen it in the past already, you're going to see, you know, trash come out there, you're going to see vegetation come out there, you're going to still see rocks. So that's why Department of Public Works is very important still. They will be out and about cleaning up as soon as they can. I've called them before in the past, and Commissioner Gabriel is very good about getting the staff out there to also maintain that environment. But please be careful when you're down that area. Because things that may be under the water, there's no potholes down there now, but you can see some things that may be under the water that can harm your cars.
What about the Rapoon Hill, coming down Rapoon Hill there to meet on both sides? We're on the western side, you're coming down towards the Wheatley Shopping Center there, that stoplight, and then on the eastern side, which is a more gradual decline, not as steep as the western side. Another area of concern.
Yeah, over in St. Thomas, and we've known about those areas for years. And of course, you have Donkey Hill.
Donkey Hill over there on the south side.
Yeah, and I'm not privy to the schedule for what Commissioner Gabriel has set up. I know there's definitely, you know, road repairs that are going to be done underway. In some cases, they will be traced right back to hurricane damages. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of discussion that Office of Disaster Recovery does with Director William Doctolin to make sure we work with FEMA to find out and verify, you know, those roads that are eligible to get repairs.
You got personnel in your agency that studies terrain, landscapes, topography, things of that nature, that would make an area more susceptible to higher level of concern?
Yeah, well, we have a whole hazard mitigation group, and that's under Ms. Rivera, Graciela Rivera, and that's definitely what they do. They verify, you know, at-risk areas and look at projects and mitigate that, because if you can take the dollar and time to fix it now, it won't be as damaging and harmful later on or as expensive to repair. So we have several projects that we have underway to make sure that those at-risk areas are looked at, especially for flooding. That's one of the big areas you worry about is flooding. And so Ms. Rivera and her staff constantly have those activities that are going on and look at.
That's the lady that works with the folks the doctor that works at UVA, hazard mitigation. They actually have to put a plan together, right?
Yes. So Dr. Grinnell.
Dr. Greg Grinnell. Yep. Yeah, and there was another doctor as well that was with him in 2020. We didn't get hit heavy in 2020, but he was on with Judy Schimmel. It was two doctors, Greg Grinnell and another one. They actually put the plan together and submitted to the federal government, right?
Yeah, we have what was called a hazard mitigation, and now it's called resiliency. In fact, today we're doing 2 days on the consulting on hazard mitigation. So Ms. Rivera has a lot of things happening this week to talk about those projects going forward. The key is if we have to submit that plan in order to help justify some of the grants.
The resources.
The grant money.
Yeah. Okay. We'll take a break, come back. We got the director of ITMA, Daryl Jashin. He'll be here with us until the bottom of the hour as we are looking at the opening of the hurricane season tomorrow. And they're going to run for 6 months from June 1 until November 30th. We'll take a break. Be back right after this.
Business opportunities at Banker St. Croix. Banker St. Croix offers deposit banking products, business online platforms, and commercial loans. Our SBA lending department offers financing options and access to capital for businesses. Banker St. Croix has two locations, one in Gallows Bay, 340-773-8500, and Peters Rest, 340-713-8500. BankofSt.Croix.com. Bank of St. Croix is an equal housing lender.
Took white America by storm, broke down barriers
to be a black artist and go to the top of the pop charts,
and changed music forever.
If you look at music and where rock came from, he is right in there.
See why there is only one.
That I am the king of rock and roll!
Little Richard on American Masters.
Friday, June 2nd at 9 p.m. on WTJX-TV, Channel 12.
I'm Scott Tong from Public Radio's Midday News Magazine, Here and Now. We bring you all the news that happens between the morning headlines and the afternoon wrap-up, plus conversations with authors and artists, stories that affect you, maybe a story about you. So join us for NPR's Midday News Magazine, Here and Now.
Weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1.
Ability Radio is a program brought to you by the Disability Rights Center of the Virgin Islands to promote a more inclusive Virgin Islands. Ability Radio brings you information on healthcare, art, culture, education, and current affairs, where we engage in lively discussions with guests locally and abroad. Join us every Saturday morning at 11:30 a.m. on WTJX-FM.
This and we're having a pre-hurricane season conversation as per the norm with director, Lake Tima director, Daryl Jashin. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning again.
Kim Waddell.
Kim Waddell, yes.
That's the
yes.
name. That's the name, right? He works at UVA.
Yes.
Right? And he works with, they put the hazard mitigation and resilience plan.
Yeah, we're adding the word resiliency. So hazard mitigation resiliency plan. Yes.
Yeah. And he and Mr. Guanell have been on. Judy Shimley, if you're listening, give me a call anytime between 8:30 and 9 o'clock after the director leave so we can wrap a little bit. He works at UVA. UVA is important in a number of different ways, not just as a institution of higher learning, but it's also as a repository.
Yes, very much. And as we rely upon them to develop some of the academic justification and some of the studies that go through, even our tsunami maps that we have developed. We're looking at the next generation of those and looking at the technology and the history to be able to provide more accurate information. So that data is important, not just how you and I feel in our guts, but UVI provides a lot of very good data and the databases that come together.
I like that terminology. Academic justification. I will start to use, I will incorporate that in my vocabulary. Just looking at the hazard mitigation and resilience plan, there's so many facets involved in this, man. You got sectors, you got citizens, you got the assess capacities, assess capabilities, strengths, needs, you put a guide together. This thing is pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, it's a format that we have to follow with FEMA. So, it's very thick. I reviewed it a couple of times, but it's something that we definitely want to have conversation with the community on also.
Yeah.
But right now, on the next 2 days, are really with a consultation with FEMA to get some feedback from them on the process that we're using to make sure we're going on the right track on this.
You got hazard environmental profiles, you got risk assessment, sustainability analysis, and then there's a mission strategy with planning a framework.
Yes.
So all of this, this ain't no 5-minute deal. This is a well thought out, and a lot of data has is put in place to make this plan real and sustainable.
And we usually update it about every 3 years.
Okay.
And that's the key because things. Technology changes, analysis changes, priorities sometimes change. We have a lot of recovery that's going on that may be separate from this, but that it all work together to ultimately, identify the needs and the gaps as well as justification for those grants that we were able to provide for the community and for businesses.
Talk about your relationship with DPNR because they're very important this time of year. They're important throughout the year, but even more so this time of year because the shoreline really is the primary, the first place of impact.
Yeah. The Department of Public Works, you know, even pre-positioning some equipment prior to the onset of the storm is very important. Commissioner Gabriel has a very good plan he put together and approved last year about the route clearance. I mean, that's so important we prioritize when Governor Brian and I go visit post-storm, as he's one of the first individuals we talk to, along with fire, along with police and EMS, to make sure we have prioritization and find out where those needs are. And we also have to partner with Water Power Authority, because you have a lot of live lines that may be down or could be concerned, as we have with VINGN. We talk about the fiber optics. Please don't cut the fiber optic cables, because we were good, but cut them. So his crew is out and about even before storms. We talk about sandbags and sandbag distribution. Department of Public Works, VI Fire, we have the availability, and once FITEMA looks at the threat, we'll open up in blue skies and get a chance to get out, get your sandbags from Public Works or from Fire. But that's a very strong group to work with in St. Thomas, St. Croix, and St. John to make sure we're prepared. The guts are always ones that individuals talk about. And if you do have issues or concern with your guts, please contact DPW. You can call FITEMA also, and we'll communicate to DPW. I learned last couple of years, they'll go up and down the guts only so far. So it may or may not be to your liking, but please make sure we address that issue so we can get answers back to you. And make sure maybe a spot that they missed. And of course, keeping those guts clean throughout the season is very, very important.
What's your biggest concern for the territory?
My biggest concern, I think, is just really trying to mobilize the community together, whether taking care of individuals and families in preparation and or responding if we have a post event. We talked last week, we did a points of distribution exercise. We went out there and we talked about, being self-sufficient for a minimum of 5 days so we can clear the routes, we can clear the areas, we can get patients evacuated, look at life savings. But then we started talking about, our infrastructure is down, and most like the power is going to be down, telephones may be down, businesses may be down. The ATMs won't work, so have some cash. But trying to get, our community back up and going as soon as we can, as quick as we can, is very important. Of course, individuals need to have that hurricane checklist, set up their kits for a community, and then be prepared to be by yourself in the sense that, stores won't be open. You have to feed your family. You got to, take care of your generator, take care of your dogs and cats. We open the shelters up. We want you to come there 24 hours prior as we open up so you're safe in there. And of course, when we have storms going on, there'll be a point that I can't send out VIPD or EMS or fire. So you're going to have to shelter in place until we can come in after the fact. So those are things I worry about still.
We haven't mentioned WAPA. What's the deal, man? You communicate with them?
Oh, all the time. I mean, whether it's sargassum, whether it's fuel challenges, whether it's transformers, we have a great group we talk to each week. And I do have the Emergency Management Council meeting I run every month with Governor Brian, Chief of Staff Knight, and all the agencies. We look at how many days of fuel's available, how much water is available by days, percent of the water tanks being filled up. Those are always concerns. In the briefings that Don Gregoire gave last week was fantastic. So he has a whole series of questions that have to be answered so the governor and I can go on the radio or go on the press and talk about, what is the conditions we have. The composite poles, a lot of them are up, so we haven't finished that process yet. So distribution will be stronger, but you still have to get generation back up and operational, prioritization back to the hospitals. Juan F. Louis Hospital North is now open. Mm-hmm. So we have to make sure we support that, as well as Schneider, as well as over Myra King Smith over on St. John. So a lot of that has to go into place. We have about 77 critical infrastructures we've analyzed in the last 2 years with the Corps of Engineers, and WAPA did a great job identifying which feeders they are on. So we can talk about if I have to get a police station up or a fire station up or an EOC up, which feeder that is on, so we can prioritize that.
You mentioned St. John and the generator, that the generator project for St. John, so that they're not dependent on the Harley plant for power in the event we're hit by a storm. What do you know about that?
I do not know the details on that, Neville. I know we're trying to do microgrids over there also, but that's a work in progress. I don't know the details on that.
Okay. I thought you might have been privy to that, because prior to his passing, John Greer had informed us about that, and every time the WAPA folk come on, I asked him about that, for obvious reasons, but the main reason is we try to get power back to key parts of the territory, high density population and all that stuff, for obvious reasons. I mean, like I said, one of the highlights of the aftermath of the last storm was the downtown being energized because you know the infrastructure investment worked, and hopefully that could be how they do going forward.
The private sector, we have a great partnership with them, and we thanks to the Department of Licensing and Consumer Affairs Commission, Major Lista, we started what's called the Business Emergency Operations Center, and we've learned a couple of things about the prioritization to get power back so they can start the business again, getting back to normal, getting the stores back open. So that's also something we have very much working with them and had that dialogue back and forth. So we don't just work on government agencies. As you know, the telecommunications sector specifically, Liberty, T-Mobile, VIA, VINGN, that's all we have to get that going together.
Director Daryl Joshua, you got to leave us 8:30, bottom of the hour. Thank you very much for joining us, and looking forward to talking with you every last Wednesday of the month.
Yes, sir. last thing I put out is curfew passes.
Yeah.
Today and tomorrow, the last 2 days to get your curfew passes in if you're a business. After that, I'm focused on looking at the Atlantic and see what's happening out there. Go to the Vitima Facebook page.
Go to Vitima. This is good for me. I'm good.
Well, there should be a date on there. It should be good for 2 years, so see when it expires.
12/31/24.
You are good, sir.
So I'm good.
Yeah, you're good. So VIPD will not harass you.
I can flash. It. Yeah.
And again, those are businesses that's important. If you are out and about because you are doing something with the community, because you have to be out and about, please, the process to go through. We won't give everybody passes. We just give one or two people per agency a pass. So you can basically be there. But Governor Bryan does not like to put curfews in place, but because of safety issues, we will do it overnight and we'll do it early in the morning. Just to make sure we first responders out there, WAPA's out there getting the roads clean, make sure it's safe.
And then last year you brought me that gift. You still got a relationship with Home Depot?
Yes, very, very much so. Yeah. And my team has some radios too.
Radios, yeah.
Yeah, we did a good outreach last Sunday, two Sundays ago at UVI with the Red Cross, and they also had those radios, the weather band radios, so 162.45. That you can get the weather. You can't get it on your car radio station, but you can get it on that special radio. But definitely, that weather band is out there for the alerts that come out. They will let you know also through National Weather Service.
Yeah, one of my listeners, Colin, said it's great to see the growth of Vitima out of what used to be civil defense. That's what we used to call it.
We've gone beyond that, definitely. And the partnerships are incredible, too.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Director.
All right, thank you, Neville.
Glad to have you here. And looking forward to communicating with you throughout the hurricane season. And hopefully it won't be a harmful or painful hurricane season.
No, and again, if you get the alert VI system, you'll get notices from Vitima and keep you aware of that. We'll put out the tropical storm, watches, 48 hours out, and the warnings will go out 36 hours out to make sure you know what's happening.
Okay, good. Stay informed. Thank you very much, Director. Appreciate you coming in the day before the hurricane season starts so we could talk a little bit about hurricane preparedness. Thank you, sir. That's Daryl Jashin, director of Vitima. You hear that big truck in the background there. We got a lot of work being done up here in the Richmond area. Yeah, we could fold it. If you could fold it, there we go. There we go. Yeah, let's bring it down and bring it alongside here. There we go. We're good. Yeah, so we'll be communicating with the Vitima, the Virgin Islands Territorial Management Agency for some reason. Oh. I see the problem right there. Yeah. It broke. Yeah, it's okay. You can lay it down. That's broken. Yeah, lay that down. We got to work on that. Just lay that down there. Yeah, we'll work on that. Unfortunately, that one had a problem here. So we're good. Civil defense. For us, landmark hurricanes actually were two hurricanes that didn't hit, and my good friend Wallace Williams referencing David and Frederick back in 1979, late August, early September. Rain. You talking about just rain. Frederick in particular. Rain. It's like, what is that? Like it started like late morning. I'd say like 10, 11 o'clock, Frederick. I mean, just rain all day, all night. I'd say 20 to 24 hours of just rain. One time, people remember hurricanes, but sometimes we we've had some rainstorms where it just rained and it wouldn't stop. We had one in November of 2001. It started like a Monday afternoon, Monday evening, and went till Wednesday. I remember this because at the time, Wayne Callwood was the Commissioner of Public Works. And we were, and he still referenced it, you know, early 2005 when I had gotten into the legislature, you know. And, of course, the politics was what it was. And, you know, they look for every reason. One of the things about politics that I want to know that the opportunity presents itself. And by the way, we're trying to reach out to Dr. Kim Waddell to see if he could talk a little bit about the hazard mitigation and resiliency plan. We're going to see if we can make that happen. A little 5-10 minute conversation to update us, and then we'll get him in on the show for a full hour so he could break it down in detail. But one of the things about politics that I want to mention, or let the public know, is you see every agency head or even a deputy commissioner or director, there's always somebody who's trying to undermine them or believes that they could do the job. And just waiting for them to make a mistake so they could put their hand up and say, give me a shot. Seriously, I experienced that early on when I was a senator. We had a good committee meeting, a very revealing meeting. And then the next thing you know, they fire the agency head because of something that came out of the meeting. Like as if, you know, firing somebody is the only way of sanctioning. But what happens is, you know, they probably had somebody who been there just talking about them, and you know what I'm saying? And once the opportunity presents itself, they're gone. And it's like the institutional knowledge that a person might have, right, is of no value. You check, and then you bring in somebody, and then when they reach, they're telling you, well, I'm going to need X amount of time to acclimate and learn the gig at the expense of the time for the people of the voice. So we got to be very, very, you know, leery about that. So checking in, of course, you know, in 2010, we had that storm down in West. We actually lost a loved one down there. Was a senator at that particular time. And that was wild. That was November 2010. I never see rain like that there as a senator. Wash out the whole bottom floor of the legislature. We didn't get back to work in earnest until, like, I was going in, but the staff couldn't get there. We had to get all that stuff. I'd say March, April. That's how rough that one was, man. The whole bottom floor, we were working remote. You check? So, whatever you do, it ain't just about wind alone. Rain could do significant damage, right? And that's why a hazard mitigation and resiliency plan is important for the territory, given where we are. And climate change is real. It used to be global warming, but they're done with that. Climate change is the terminology now. And to see that disturbance taking place in the Gulf, we got to keep an eye on that. We'll take a break. Be back right after this. Hopefully get with Mr. Waddell in a little bit.
Listening to the wings of a monarch butterfly. What a magical thought.
They arrive here on the Day of the Dead, which we celebrate here in Mexico. And a lot of the indigenous people believe that it's the souls of their ancestors that are returning. You know? And it's very spiritual.
That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
great question. That is a great question.
And that's a great question.
Wow, that's another great question.
That's a great question.
Oh, that's a great... that's a great question.
That is a great question.
What a great question.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear unexpected questions and unexpected answers.
Weekdays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
I'm Scott Tong from Public Radio's Midday News Magazine, Here and Now. We bring you all the news that happens between the morning headlines and the afternoon wrap-up. Plus, conversations with authors and artists, stories that affect you, maybe a story about you. So join us for NPR's Midday News Magazine, Here and Now.
Weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1.
The PBS NewsHour has a rich legacy of in-depth reporting and strong storytelling.
Only four people have sat in that chair before us, and the enormity of this moment is not lost on me. People turn to us because they know they can hear from trusted sources of information and news.
That won't change a bit, even as the faces behind the desk change.
Good evening. I'm Jeff Bennett.
And I'm Amna Nawaz.
Weekdays at 7 p.m. on WTJX TV, Channel 12.
Analyze This, and we're joined now by Dr. Greg Gwinnell, who's joining us from the Hazard Mitigation and Resilience Plan. Good morning, Dr. Gwinnell. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. James. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Sorry about the short notice, but I got into a conversation with the Vitima director, and he mentioned the Hazard Mitigation planning work that y'all do in conjunction with Ms. Rivera at Vitima.
Yes, that's correct. I was actually listening to your show on my way to work.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to breaking that down and talking. So how you been?
Doing well, thank you. Yeah, it's we've had a nice rain here on St. Thomas, so it's much greener than it used to be 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Although I see that St. Croix is very, very dry.
Mm-hmm.
So how are things going down there?
Rough. Yeah. Patchy brown. We need it green up. Every time I talk with my people in on St. Thomas, they keep talking about, are you getting rain over there? So I was like, what's going on? It looks like the rain segregated, being prejudicial, so I got to keep an eye on the rain. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't put intense behind rain, but you know, it is.
No, I'm just having fun. How Judy Schimmel and Dr. Waddell doing?
Oh, they're doing very well. Yeah, they're doing very well. Still putting some final touches and on the plan, and starting to look more closely at this issue of climate change. So yeah, we're doing well.
Explain the plan. How are you to put all these variables in it? I was looking over, and this is a comprehensive document.
Yeah, it is. So what we try to do is we try to look at two different things. The first one is understanding the hazards. So we're looking at hurricanes, which bring wind and a lot of rain. We're looking at rainstorms. We're also looking at earthquakes, drought, which we just talked about, and landslides. In addition, we're looking at different sort of man-made hazards, not terrorism, but mostly related to, potential issues that come with transportation accident. So we looked at, who can be affected if there is a plane crash or if, there is a boat accident. We're also looking at issues of hazardous material. So what can happen if, there's a release of hazardous material, mostly gas stations. We're not really looking at, something as lime tree. It's a little bit too complex. We're looking at more sort of day-to-day sort of accidents and how, you know, the territory can be in a better position to handle those. So we're pretty much done with all of that. The biggest surprise, not surprise, the biggest insight, I would say, that came from our analysis of the hazards is the fact that, you know, we are in pretty good shape when it comes to wind hazards, so big hurricane. We are in, okay shape when it comes to, understanding the flooding and all that stuff. I think the hazard that, you know, we need to really start paying attention to is the earthquake hazards. I know that the territory is doing a lot of good work when it comes to preventing, you know, flooding and damage from hurricane. But I know that Ms. Rivera and Director Jashin recently attended a meeting in Puerto Rico about earthquake. A lot of good insight came out of this in terms of, you know, maybe starting to put more effort on the earthquake risk. There are a lot of, you know, critical facilities that we have that are on field, such as, you know, the airport in St. Thomas, the Lime Tree, St. Croix, the power plant on St. Thomas, a lot of things that are, you know, that can liquefy. So if there's an earthquake, so really started to put attention on that. But I think we did a comprehensive effort on the hazard piece and have some good recommendation to build on top of the good work that ODR and Vikina are doing. And then
it also includes the multi-sectoral stakeholder engagement effort.
Yes, and that was the second part of our effort, is really sort of engaging different folks on these topics and sort of asking ourselves, you know, how can we be more resilient? How can we be more, you know, self-dependent? Because, you know, we see that if there's a big thing happening, for example, a big earthquake, you know, it might be that the airport is not accessible for a few days. So we might have to count on ourselves for a few days. And so we're sort of looking at that and discussing with different stakeholders what that means to be more resilient. And we've been having some really good discussion, a lot of insight that go beyond just the plan. I think they are benefiting other projects, and we're benefiting from other projects. So there's a lot of long discussions that hopefully will continue to go on after the plan to kind of ask the question, you know, how can the territory be more resilient? So, we're pretty excited about it. Putting the final touches on the plan right now, in discussion with the ODR and Vitima to have the final stakeholder meetings where we're going to present and, you know, double check the I's and the T's. And then we're going to make it final probably, you know, at the end of the summer. So we're pretty excited about this.
The Department of Planning and Natural Resources, they've been looking at our watersheds. Have you looked over that data? Have they made that data public yet?
Yeah, we actually in constant discussion with them. That goes towards what I was saying earlier about the fact that, you know, we're getting more and more insight into, you know, understanding what causes flooding in different regions. So that was, you know, very, very helpful. We've had a few meetings with them where they shared, you know, some of their findings that we are incorporating into our document. So we also, you know, shared some of our findings that we shared with them. So it's really a very close-knit collaboration where we all sort of help each other, because ultimately we want to better understand how those processes occur, what drives, you know, those processes, so that we can better come up with solutions. So we've been working with DPNR a lot on their watershed work. We also paying close attention to their land use planning effort, because what we found is that one of the big driver of flooding on all islands is development. I know that, you know, the permitting people and inspection people are doing their best, but development is sort of driving a lot of the excessive flooding that we see now compared to, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So, sort of providing this information and see what we can do in terms of, you know, how we develop the territory moving forward to try to minimize those negative impacts.
That's good. What about St. John? What's your What's your take on St. John and how we could continue to support them and their topography and given how unique that is and the proximity to St. Thomas?
St. John, I would put St. John, to be honest, in the same category as St. Thomas, except that, you know, St. John is a little bit more, it's smaller, and, you know, it's a little bit more complicated because of the presence of the national park.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, processes, the processes on St. John are fairly similar to St. Thomas in terms of steep slopes that, you know, drive the water real quick to the floodplain. So one thing that, you know, we're looking at is, again, try to sort of rethink a little bit some of the constraint on development. Try to also think about, you know, how to develop along the coastline. With DPNR, we are starting to sort of, you know, look again at this issue of coastal development. We've, you know, assessed all the beaches in the territory. We looked at, you know, all the coastline in the territory. We looked at, you know, where the various major drainage occurs along the coastline.
Isn't that an area that I didn't mean to cut you off, but I want to.
No.
I didn't want to forget the question. Isn't that an area that if we were to pay a little bit more attention to, it could actually be an even more valuable asset for us?
Well, that's the thing. That's exactly the thing. You know, it is a valuable asset for us right now, which is why we have
even more valuable. You know,
that's right. Development and pressure. I guess the thing that we see is that, you know, sea level is rising. That's just, you know, pure observation, and that's just, you know, the reality that our seas are rising, and so we are slowly losing, you know, some of our coastline. And as we move into the future, we're going to lose more of our coastline. So now is a good time to start asking those questions of, you know, what do we want to do about our coastal assets and how to preserve them, you know, moving into the future. We are not like, you know, a Miami Beach situation or, you know, Newport situation where, you know, every year they experience, you know, flooding in the street and stuff like that. So I think we are a little bit, you know, if you will, ahead of the curve, maybe, in terms of we have time to prepare, but it's important to prepare now. And I think that that's, you know, what's so great about, you know, the current leadership of DPNR is that they are, you know, starting to look at those issues right now so that we are better prepared when we start to, you know, be affected in a more severe way, which we will be in 20 years. We need to preserve our coastal assets. So we need to start thinking a little bit about, you know, what coastal development looks like. But as I mentioned earlier, we also need to think about what land development looks like. And that's the big project that DPNR is heading right now.
So check this out. Since I got you here on my program, and you specialize in understanding, you know, land and land's ability to sustain. I read an article last week where they said a research team in New York City calculated that all the buildings in New York City, right? They said 1.7 trillion tons of concrete, metal, and glass, right? About the mass of 4,700 Empire State buildings is pressing down on the ground. Break that down. Break that down for us now. I mean, I think I know what it means, but I would like to hear it from your technical perspective. What exactly are they saying when they mention something like that?
Yeah, I think, and I need to. I heard it, but I haven't read it in detail.
Yeah.
But if you ask me point blank, I would say that.
Just on the surface, lay people language.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I think that what they're saying is that. So you have to look at the geology.
Mm-hmm.
And from my understanding, this area used to be a swamp. I am not.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. You're absolutely correct.
So I think it used to be a swamp. Just looking at, you know, old images of, you know, the Native American and things like that. But I think that so your substrate is squishy, if you will, right? It's not St. Thomas. It's not, you know, Rock City. And so when you start to build, at some point, you know, the substrate will start to respond.
So they said the ground is going down and the water is coming up, right?
That's right. So the water is coming up no matter what. The glaciers are melting. the seas are rising. They are rising faster, actually, in the Northeast than they are in the Caribbean. But the seas are rising. And on top of that,
the
weight of the building is pushing down on the land. And so your net sort of rise is faster because you have a negative from the land and you have a positive from the water. So it ends up with a, you know, a bigger positive, if you will.
So is there anything that we could learn from buildings and constructions given, you know, we got water, we're surrounded by water, we got a lot of buildings on our shorelines, like the Waterfront Drive and all that stuff. Is there anything we could learn from something like this? Is our substance so different from that there's nothing like it, but there's, I would think that there's always something one could learn from building on top of a particular plane.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to understanding the geology and understanding what our construction does to the geology, but also how the geology and other forces sort of interplay. And I think for us, the biggest thing that we need to look at is what's going to happen to the aquifers, especially on St. Croix, because St. Croix has a different geology.
Yeah.
And it may be that seawater is entering into the aquifer. And that's actually something that Commissioner Oyo, I think he received funding from Department of Interior. That's a project under the Inflation Reduction Act, where we will be looking at, you know, how far the salt water, you know, may or may not have entered the King Seal Aquifer. That's the type of thing that we need to look at, is basically how the geology interacts with, you know, other processes.
What's the better term here? Enhance our appreciation for those who live here for geology. You think maybe that's something that we need to, you know, pay a little bit more attention to?
Yes, we actually need to pay attention to all, you know, natural geophysical sciences, because what we are seeing more and more is that everything starts to interplay in ways that, you know, in the past we were thinking, oh, yeah, you know, I'm just building buildings, you know, you can do, you know, crush your rocks over there, but, you know, I'm building buildings. But now what we realize is that, you know, as your example with New York just said, things are behaving in ways that we didn't anticipate.
And climate change impacting things as well, right?
Climate change is just pushing the accelerator.
So, you know,
New York would have sunk no matter what, you know, because of, you know, the geology and the weight of the building.
Hold on one second. Don't hang up. Yeah. Hold on one second. We're going to take a break. Come back. We can wrap up this conversation because I got a question about the mitigation plan and a provision for VI records and archives, electronic and print. So we'll take a break, come back, wrap up this conversation with Dr. Gwinnell, and then talk with Eugene Tull on the second hour. Be back right after this.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
You know exactly how you take your morning coffee. Knowing where to get news you can rely on is just as simple. Listen to Morning Edition from NPR News every weekday.
From 6 to 8 a.m. here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands. You can also listen on demand via the WTJX app, available for download from the App Store in Google Play.
So I spent the past year trying to figure out what news designed for 21st century humans might look like. One of the things that really stuck with me was that we now know that humans actually need hope to get up in the morning. And I don't think as a journalist I ever thought about it that way.
We're always looking for new and better ways to understand the world we live in. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.